Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Mraz. It was another day of takes, laughs, and memorable moments. Keep it locked here. It's the best of the DA show.
Let's begin with Major League Baseball. Here's what we learned over the weekend. There's a lot of 2-1s and 1-2s. After the opening weekend and 3-game series, nobody's undefeated and nobody's winless. Everybody's either 2-1 or 1-2, which suggests after a 60-game regular season, we're going to have a lot of teams bunched up together. And with an expanded postseason, again, anybody can make this playoffs. Anybody. The way that they're going to handle this is that the top two teams in each division, there are three divisions in both the National League and the American League, the top two teams in each division are going to make the playoffs, and then two wild cards as well based on the best record. So 8 teams in the National League, 8 teams in the American League, and right now after opening weekend, nobody is undefeated and nobody is winless. Everybody is 2-1 or 1-2. So there's going to be a huge grouping, conglomeration of teams in a very tight pack moving forward until we get to October, assuming that the season unfolds with a full 60 games. So one of the differentiators is going to be health, who stays healthy for all 60 games. And right now, the injuries are piling up from a pitching standpoint. Look no further than Justin Verlander, who there were reports over the weekend would be done for the entire season. Yes, some are saying that he's going to be done for the entire season. Now, Justin Verlander, one of only a number of pitchers that found themselves injured this weekend. Justin Verlander is disputing that report. Two sources told the Houston Chronicle, and of course the Astros are World Series contenders, that Verlander will miss the season. However, he said that report is inaccurate. He tweeted, "It is a forearm strain. I'm hopeful that some rest will heal it, and I'll be able to return soon. Thanks for all your well wishes." Dusty Baker, their manager, also said that that's very premature. Baker said, quote, "It happened on Friday early in the game, but he said that it felt fine. You could see that he was throwing the ball great. It was kind of a shock to hear that report. We're looking into it. We know we're really short, especially on veteran arms. We're still trying to decide who can help us." But Dusty said he's just going to rest him for a few weeks, and so Verlander could potentially come back. Look, that's good news for the Astros. But there's a number of other pitchers that were injured this weekend. We saw Marcus Stroman of the Mets injured late last week, taking him out of the season. And there's been a number of arms that have gone down early and a number of arms that have looked really ineffective, like Shohei Ohtani returning from Tommy John and not recording an out being on the mound. Not recording an out. 6 batters, 3 hits, 3 walks. So are we seeing a long layoff lead to a rash of injuries with Major League Baseball pitching? It is where we begin your cold open.
0-2, the count to White. Pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. Got him on a slider. Nothing but sliders there to White. And Verlander picks up his 7th strikeout.
He wanted to go some more. You know, he was throwing the ball well. It was just came over and he said, "Hey, man, My arm's a little tender, and that's when we took him out. We know it's a forearm strain, and you know, he's being seen by the doctor, so he'll probably be shut down for a couple of weeks, and then we'll see from there.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heart-rending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
That is Astros Radio on the call. That is also Dusty Baker discussing. I think there is going to be a number of pitchers that, because of the long layoff and trying to get back to speed middle of the season now, middle of the summer, are going to suffer injuries. And Verlander is just the first, I think, of a number of guys that we're going to have to worry about. And he's not certainly going to be the only guy. As I mentioned before, a number of other names as well. You know, we've got Clayton Kershaw that also is sidelined for the time being. He was unexpectedly placed on the injured list because of back stiffness. And I think that when you're doing something as laborious as throwing baseballs at 98 miles per hour, and you're taking a long time off, even if you soft toss throughout what was a 3-month hiatus, when you get back to full-on throwing, it does put an unnatural strain on your back, on your lats, on your elbows, on your shoulders. Because think about it, for the first time ever, Major League Baseball pitchers, when we were in March and April and May, didn't know when they would be pitching again next. They didn't know if there was going to be a season. So you couldn't go out there and throw full strength. And obviously, pitchers take entire off seasons off, or bulks of off seasons, to make sure they are rested and strong for when it comes back. But they know what date they need to start back into the process. Okay, pitchers and catchers report February 15th, and so I know I need to be here by that date. And I know I need to be here by March 1, here by March 15th, and here by April 1. Pitchers didn't know that coming out of this spring shutdown. Pitchers didn't know that because for 3 months, they didn't know if there was going to be a season, when it was going to start, how many games it was going to be. You know, it took them a while to figure this out. So I don't think this is a surprise. And yet I think this is a really interesting and important dynamic right now with Major League Baseball. Major aces, big time arms, Verlander, Kershaw, lesser extent, Otani, Stroman, keep counting. We've got early injury. Strasburg getting injured early as well. That is a sign that it's going to be difficult to keep your aces and your rotations intact this year. Health is going to be a war of attrition. And the layoff, I absolutely believe, hurt the starting pitchers more than it hurt the hitters. Hit me up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. Mraz, do you think this is just the early injuries that pitchers are dealing with because they're having a restart? Do you think we'll be able to get through this? Or could this be the lasting effect of this bizarre sprint to the finish line after the holdout, which is we're going to see for the next 2.5 months a lot of starting pitchers go down?
I can't buy into that. I think this is nothing more than what we normally see in Major League Baseball. Pitchers' arms are the most delicate thing going. And yes, you could correlate the ramp up for 3 weeks. I understand that part of it. But we see this for a 162-game ramp up as well. I mean, heck, before this season started, we had lost Chris Sale, Noah Syndergaard, Luis Severino. There were big arms going down everywhere before the layoff. It just happens every year in Major League Baseball. And really, this year, what are we talking about? Clayton Kershaw with chronic back problems. Steven Strasburg, who finds his way on the IL every year. It's Verlander is the big one that scares everybody. But you know what? That's also a guy who stayed relatively healthy over the past couple of years. His age has started to catch up as well. So I'd keep an eye on it, but I'm not ready to fully commit right now that the 60-game ramp-up season here is what's knocking these pitchers down. In fact, watching as much baseball as I did, and I probably watched more baseball than anybody probably should over a 3-day span, I noticed pitchers being way ahead of hitters and feeling like it's the hitters who are way behind here as we start this 60-game.
Well, I'm talking about health here. So you don't see any correlation. You don't see anything that is unique about After one start, Steven Strasburg, Clayton Kershaw, Justin Verlander, Marcus Stroman all being injured. You don't find any correlation to that.
No, and especially because when it came to Kershaw and when it came to, now it's slipping my mind, Strasburg, they were scratched before their first starts even got there.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, we see baseball pitchers and big names get hurt every year. The difference, though, is when we shut them down for a month, 2 months, that now becomes the difference in they're out for the year as opposed to normally. I think that is the difference there. But the pitchers and their arms, I mean, we talk about it every year, is the most delicate position and injury that you see every single year of baseball pitchers. So I think this is the same thing I see year in and year out. I don't correlate it.
I don't think, though, that we see before opening day Clayton Kershaw, Steven Strasburg getting shut down, Marcus Stroman shut down before their first start. And then after a start that Verlander looked really good in, suddenly could be done for the season. That feels very dramatic to me.
It does, but Diaz, I just pointed out again, you saw Syndergaard, Sale, and Severino go down before opening day, before the original opening day. I mean, that had nothing to do with a 60-game season. This is happening.
No, that's true.
It's a baseball-wide problem every year. The pitchers, it's all about a war of attrition with your pitchers. Now, again, the difference is when a guy gets a forearm strain and you hear season, yeah, that's a little startling, but when the season's only 60 games, you could afford to miss that in 162. You can't afford to miss that now.
I think that we're going to see a lot of these starting pitchers that pitch this weekend and this first week, I think we're going to see a rash of injuries of guys go down. We'll see. I think we're going to see that. I think these guys, they predicted this when we had the offseason, expanded rosters. That's why they didn't want to overtax bullpens. That's why we're starting runners on second base in the 10th inning. It's because they knew long layoff, quick restart, sprint to 60 games. I think they knew there was going to be more injuries to pitchers than ever before.
Inside, it's this date in mothership history.
Well, 5 years ago was one of the defining moments of my career. It is still something that I'm asked about all of the time. In fact, it might be one of the top lines of my biography ever. The time that Mike Francesa trashed me because I did a CBS Sports update, a CBS Sports Minute about Hulk Hogan. This goes back 5 years ago, when there was really nothing going on in the sports world at the end of July, and I had to wrap out a couple of CBS Sports Minutes, which air across the country on every single affiliate. Mike, the longtime host on WFN in New York, have never really liked the CBS Sports Minutes, and when I did one that revolved around Hulk Hogan's racist tirade in a video that was released that aired on his show, he really didn't like it, and he took me to task on the radio. I got tons of tweets about this, tons of texts about this. And so then I responded, and so did other colleagues here on the network. John Kincaid had a response to Mike. Doug Gottlieb had a response to Mike. And it led to what amounted to a CBS Sports Radio war against Mike Francesa. I really didn't take it personally, but here was this moment, me responding 5 years ago today.
If you're going to do these commentaries, what's with the initials? What's with the initials on my show with these initials? These people haven't been in the business 20 minutes.
This is Damon Amendolaro with your CBS Sports Minute.
They've not done anything, and they got, give your name. What's with the initials? No one knows who you are. I wouldn't know who you are if you walked in the studio, and you're going to tell me the initials.
This is Damon Amendolaro with your CBS Sports Minute.
Jeez, I hate these commentaries. They drive me nuts. They don't belong on my show or any show. You know what?
Now, I thought it was a little unfair when Mike said, I wouldn't know you if you walked into the studio. I see Mike every day here. Let's think about some of the things Mike would want me to write about and to record about, right? So let's start here. I know one thing that he has gone off on has been Brady defenders, right? So I think let's start there. I should probably avoid defending Brady or the Patriots.
He made a mistake. Why didn't Brady turn his phone over?
Well, it's a kangaroo court.
How is the NFL a kangaroo court?
Could you please let me explain why?
No,
why
I don't want to hear this garbage. Give me an answer to the questions I asked you. I don't want your math equations.
Okay, all right, so that's the first thing. No, Brady got it. I know Mike's a big soccer fan.
And I saw a guy make a winning kick with a lefty kick. Are there guys who kick with both legs? What do they actually get if they win the World Cup? Is it just a trophy? Is there money involved?
Okay, so maybe I will avoid soccer.
Especially the basic fundamentals.
So I should. Well, I'm just going to avoid soccer altogether on the next one. Also, we know Mike is known for the one time when it looked like on the simulcast he fell asleep when Sweeney Murdy, his guest, was on with him.
Mike on Long Island. What's up, Mike? Yes, Mike.
Oh, sorry about that. I fell asleep when you started talking about Sweeney Murdy.
Oh, God. You know, listen. I'm not. The next one is gone. Well, you're gone anyway because I'm not in the mood.
Okay, so I'm not gonna reference that. Maybe the best thing I could do is try to get to the bottom of what makes a Shake Shack burger so delicious.
The hamburger is good because the bread is something special about the bread. There's something about the bread in those Shake Shack hamburgers. I can't figure out what they do to the bread, but the bread is outrageous. The bread is just incredibly good.
Okay, so that's my checklist for building a better CBS Sports Minute.
Okay, so there are so many things about this. That is your This Day of Mothership History moment today. Mike just retired again this past week. He finally signed off for the last time. He had retired and then come back, and now he's retired again. And in all honesty, I really do salute Mike on an amazing career. Any of us in this business could only pray of having half the success that he did, half the longevity. He has been in the business for a long time. He had amazing ratings for a long, long time. He had a 30 for 30 made of him and Mad Dog. So he's just an iconic type of sports talk host, and I wish him nothing but the best in retirement, and he had an amazing career. And Mike and I actually did hash out our differences in the studio as well as at Saratoga. I saw him in person at Saratoga, and we had like two good throwdown kind of arguments, and after that, we were always fine. So we do not live in some type of state of war at this point, and I'm happy about that. But it was amazing how mad he got at that minute. And just as the backstory, I was in for Gottlieb that day. Doug used to have afternoon drive here on CBS Sports Radio, and it was me and Bart Scott were filling in that day. And for the backdrop, these sports minutes have to be written and recorded during your shift, basically, because they've got to air at specific times. So nobody writes them for me. I write my own, and I was trying to write it during a commercial break in the middle of juggling a million things. That show was on TV as well. So I was totally distracted. Of course, Bart's going a mile a minute. You got to make sure you babysit Bart during commercial breaks. And I love Bart, but you got to reel him in, focus him. This is what we're going to talk about. And I'm just trying to rip off a couple of minutes here. And so nothing was happening in sports except Hulk Hogan had this racist tirade on a videotape. And so I just was like, okay, I'm going to write about that. And Mike hated it. I mean, absolutely hated wrestling, hated Hulk Hogan, I guess, not a real American. I don't know that whole thing. I mean, I guess not a Hulkamaniac rather. And he trashed me on the air, and the whole initials thing became a big thing. Like, don't use your initials. So now to this day, 5 years later, everybody still says, you know what, you shouldn't use your initials as a joke about the Francesa thing. And at the time, Mraz, remember, we had Gottlieb, Feinstein, Kincaid, everybody on this network, BT, everybody warring against Francesa because of what he did. I really felt like, wow, we were a real team there, that the network stood up and they had my back.
Yeah, everybody else who did Sportsman, it started using their initials at the end.
BG,
I'm BT, I'm JK, and it became like a wink, wink, you know, you're one of our guys. Yeah, it was amazing. Everybody under the wing, DA was the young guy down there. We're gonna back our guy. It was a was a major deal. And as you pointed out, D.A., it shouldn't be swept under the rug. Your moment at Saratoga, Mike's place of vacation, to run into Mike where he is, you know, head to toe, top notch in an expensive suit, and there's D.A. basically in an Otto the Orange t-shirt and flip-flops looking like he hasn't bathed in 3 days. And, you know, there were some pictures that emerged of this argument. You looked like you belonged in two different places, but yet there you were over some horse manure having a good conversation about this.
Yeah, I just had to let Mike kind of blow off his steam, and I just kind of talked him off of the ledge, which I guess I ended up doing twice, one at the studio and one at Saratoga. You know, the thing is, I never, ever, ever got mad at Mike for this. I mean, I was a little annoyed that he said, I wouldn't know you if you walked into the studio. I mean, he knew who I was. It was like... We work at sister networks. We're right next to one another. So that was kind of a low blow, I felt. But other than that, it was great. I mean, at that point in time, I'm the night host here on CBS Sports Radio, and a Radio Hall of Famer is trashing me on a show that's number one in the biggest city in the country, the biggest market in the country for 30 years. I mean, that was great. For my exposure. That was great, you know? And never bad PR, you know? All PR is good PR. So what a day that was, though. What a week that was. It was so intense that week. Doing more, sponsored by The Home Depot. Everything that you need to do project smarter, faster, easier. The Home Depot here to help. And they've got many ways to help. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. How about Dansby Swanson, the shortstop blasting a home run, tying a career high 5 RBIs. So the Braves absolutely crushed the Mets 14-1 last night. Last time Swanson had 5 RBIs, the 4th of July last year against the Phillies. And now we've got the NFL. And the NFL will begin training camp this week. Whew, that's another big one. And the NFL, of all of them, in my estimation, is the greatest challenge. There's the most on the line. The NBA is going to come back and have a 2.5-month sprint to its champion. Same thing with the NHL. And so they only got to get through 2+ months. And also remember this about the NHL and the NBA. As teams get eliminated, there's fewer players to test and there's fewer variables going on. You know, the NBA and the NHL are going to start basically voting teams off the island. And once they get down to 8 teams and then 4 teams, less testing, less players, less staff, more control. The NFL has 32 teams until further notice that they've got to try to keep safe. So the NFL not only has 32 teams that they've got to try to keep safe until December and then January until the playoffs begin, but also a sport that lends itself to potentially high infection rate because they're in contact constantly. Just imagine the offense and defensive lines. They're in hand-to-hand combat for 3 hours. So anybody that is positive on the offense or defensive line, a running back, a player that's going to get in the middle of a dog pile, I mean, you're really potentially the epicenter of spreading it to a lot of other players. So the NFL has a lot of unknowns that these other leagues wouldn't have to deal with. And it might be more difficult. Now, baseball is going to try the same thing, 30-plus teams over the course of this fall. But again, they're going to get in and out in 60 games. And so they're going to be done by the end of September, and half the league is going to be gone by the end of September. Now, think about that. By the end of September, 16 of the 30 teams, or 14 of the 30 teams, go home. 16 move on. But then there's one-game playoffs and three-game playoff series. So, again, you're eliminating teams. The NFL starting in September and trying to get all the way to January with all 32. So this is what is at the epicenter right now of trying to keep this league safe and the negotiations between the Players Association and the league. The union and the league are working on an on-the-fly CBA that covers this season to ensure players will practice personal responsibility in a pandemic. Now, this is really interesting. The deal between the two sides specifically prohibits players from engaging in certain behaviors. Players cannot attend indoor nightclubs. They cannot go to indoor bars unless they're picking up food. They cannot attend indoor house parties. That definition is 15 or more people. They cannot attend indoor concerts. They can't go to professional sporting events. They can't go to indoor church services that are open to more than 25% capacity. Players can be fined if they're in violation of these rules. And here's the more important thing. If they test positive after violating one of these rules, they will not be paid for the games that they miss. And future guarantees in their contracts voided. Now, I just want to reset this because this is a whole new world. This is totally new ground we're breaking. If players are found in violation of any of these things, indoor nightclubs, indoor bars, unless you're picking up food, indoor house parties, that's 15 or more people, indoor concerts, at professional sporting events, or indoor church services where the church allows more than 25% capacity, you are in violation of your contract and you can be fined. And games that you miss, if you test positive, you are not paid for, and future guaranteed money in the contract are void. Whoa. My take? Good. My take is good. Look, at the end of the day, here is the bit about professional sports. However you feel about masks, however you feel about civil liberties, I want you to toss that out right now. I don't care if you're pro-mask or anti-mask. I don't care if you're pro-civil liberties or think that this is under siege. I don't care. Throw that out. It has nothing to do with this conversation. Nothing. Remember that. This is a league that cannot function unless everybody within the league is adhering to the same rules. It's not the same. Okay, I'm not talking about masks. I'm not talking about civil liberties. Take that off the table. This is a business that is collectively bargained and negotiated at a bargaining table between lawyers and player associates and representatives of owners and the owners themselves. It is collectively bargained that these players that are employed by the 32 teams, without everybody buying into the same set of rules, the league is screwed. Okay, the league is absolutely screwed. It's a business model set up, and it is collectively bargained and agreed upon. And I say good to all of these rules because let's just say you said, hey, this is anti-American. You can't have players that are not allowed to go to church services. You can't have players not allowed to go have a drink at a bar if it's legal in their state. You can't stop these players from doing legal things. You know, you can't stop them. They're American citizens. No, and here's why. That's the wrong way of thinking of it. Because if they don't want to be football players, if they don't want to agree to this, if they want to just strike it on their own and be anything else, fine. They can go do all these things. But if you are agreeing to the circumstances surrounding being an NFL player, you've got to adhere to the ways that keep this thing going. If the NFL has an outbreak and four teams, let's say, have 20 guys test positive, and now they can't play their Sunday games, that's four forfeitures. Okay? What happens if you start stacking forfeitures? What happens if two teams on the same weekend have an outbreak of 20 guys? And now you can't play that game and there is no forfeit winner. Once you start breaking apart the competitive balance of this, it is so delicate. You are totally screwed. The league is totally screwed. So if you want to try to get from the starting line, which is this week, to January and then the playoffs,
The only way you can do it is of the utmost discipline. It's the only way. The only way you can accomplish this is of the utmost structure and discipline, which is why when people were bellyaching a couple of months ago about all of these rules that the NFL put down, how can you enforce this? This is crazy. This is this. This is that. I said, it's not about right now what's realistic and what's unrealistic. It's about creating the most structure possible and then realizing once you get into the act of it, okay, we can take this away. Okay, this doesn't work. What you can't do is throw a submarine in the ocean that has leaks and then fix it on the fly. That doesn't work. You have to make sure that submarine is set and protected and safe and overly engineered. And then once you get into the water, you go, okay, well, we don't need this. We don't need that. We don't need this. But you can't throw it in there and go, well, we'll figure this out if it has a leak. No, it's already in there. Once you start the season, you can't then start, okay, well, why don't we try this rule? Well, you know what? We were too lax on this. You got to be overly tight on everything. And this is part of that. Before you even hit the ground, you have to have players understanding this is what's at stake. Okay, you want to be a doofus? You want to do your own thing? You want to be you? And you want to go to an indoor bar? It could be legal in your state. If you get sick, you put everybody else at risk. You put your team at risk. You put your franchise. You put the league at risk. You put the season at risk because you want to do you. So you know what? If you test positive, you don't get paid. I am totally fine with this. 100% fine. Because again, it takes everybody buying in to execute this season. It is a remarkable challenge the NFL is trying to undergo right now. They got to keep 32 teams safe for the next 5 months. Whoa. They got to keep 32 teams operable over the next 5 months. They can't keep 31 operable or 30 or 29. They need 32 teams in operation for the next 5 months. And then you've got to try to execute the playoffs and a Super Bowl in February. Now, who knows? Virus could plummet. We could be safe in a month. It could skyrocket in 2 months. Anything can happen in there. But from where we stand right now, you got to try to keep your business operating however you can, whatever it's going to take. And these things take everybody sacrificing. These type of endeavors take everybody being responsible. You know? And it's not that far removed from sports in general. How do the Kansas City Chiefs win the Super Bowl last year? It takes a total buy-in. Everybody's got to be disciplined all of the time. Okay, it's a different type of discipline. But Patrick Mahomes can't get drunk on a Saturday night before the Broncos game. He just can't. And Andy Reid can't ignore the game plan this week against the Patriots and instead just go to IHOP and crush pancakes all week. You know, everybody's got to be on point all season, every day of the season. That's the only way teams win championships. Complete buy-in, which is why there's such a feeling of accomplishment when you do it. Not only do you prove that you are the best of your league and your peers, but you knew the commitment that went into it. You don't just get to do whatever you want whenever you want to do it. It takes everybody buying in. And maybe you've played on a team before. Maybe you've had some type of competition before. And you had to have the buy-in of everybody. Maybe you've started a business before. Maybe there was a huge thing in your family where everybody had to buy in and be disciplined. There's a feeling of such accomplishment when you do that, that everybody knows you have to sacrifice. You have to pull together. You have to do your part. And anybody that doesn't, you're screwed. I'm fine with this. I am absolutely fine with it. Do I think it's realistic to have every single player buy into all of these things? Maybe not. But the threat of having your contract voided, the threat of, okay, you want to miss games because you tested positive because you were the idiot? Well, those games you miss your game check. There's going to be some dolts in this NFL that don't think of it. You know, when you're 22 years old and rich, or you're 22 years old and poor, you know, you tend to think that everything revolves around you. You are invulnerable, and you'll just, you skate by without the rules. I mean, how many 22-year-olds or 23-year-olds or 25-year-olds have played that card before? Not everybody's going to do everything right. But the threat of, if you're in the violation, you don't get paid. Well, that's enough to steer a lot of guys the right way. And you have to have complete buy-in. Fine with this. It's collectively bargained. You're not telling guys something that they don't want to do. Okay, you don't want to do it? Fine. You don't get to play football this year. And as I've said all along with all of these other sports, if you want to opt out because you don't feel safe, that's fine. You just don't get your salary. That is totally fine. You should not have a stigma. You should not have anybody bash you for not playing. You don't feel safe. You don't want to play. That's fine. You just don't get your salary. If you want that nice big check that comes with being a professional athlete, then you've got to abide by all the protocols and take the same risks that all of your peers are. But I'm fine with this.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
We begin with Avery Johnson, who has obviously great experience in the NBA. And remember, once upon a time, won an NBA championship with the 99 San Antonio Spurs against the New York Knicks. Well, Avery Johnson weighed in on the Knicks hiring Tom Thibodeau as their next head coach. This is from CBS Sports HQ.
You're talking about a coach that brings a lot of discipline to an organization. And if he gets a chance to do it his way on the court, he doesn't have to worry about responsibilities as a general manager or as a president. Because he had those duties with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Now he can just focus on coaching and being the best version of himself, which we saw with his stint with the Chicago Bulls. So you're going to see disciplined basketball. You're going to see a tough, hard-nosed defensive team, a team that's going to, you know, really give it their all.
So Avery Johnson talking about Tom Thibodeau. Those are all hallmarks of Thibodeau teams. Really physical. They are very defensive-minded. They are disciplined, hard-nosed. That's all Tom Thibodeau. But how long does that work for in today's NBA? How long does that work for a franchise without a lot of talent? And how long is that going to work for James Dolan? That's always the question marks here. The Tom Thibodeau is hard-nosed and disciplined and all of that. But if you don't have the talent to execute this, and so you lose games, what's the patience, the shelf life in New York with James Dolan? And that's always the question, which is why nothing ever takes in New York with the Knicks, is that there's never enough time. Number one, Dolan hires buffoons to run the franchise. And then when you hire somebody, they're always looking over their shoulder because there's no coherent plan. There's no 5 to 7 year plan. So you're trying to save your job by year two, and then the whole thing goes out the window. So consider me very skeptical that this is not just the next name in Knicks history, because we haven't seen anything really change within the Knicks front office or organization. It's just next name, next man up. It's a lightly talented team, meaning you're going to lose games. Is there going to be patience for losing games? Will players have patience for Thibodeau's hardline style if they are losing games? Will James Dolan have patience for a hardline style if they're losing games? All of that feels like it's just the next short chapter in Knicks history. Here is Joe Maddon, Angels manager, as Shohei Ohtani, who once upon a time was the next Babe Ruth. He could hit, he could pitch. He was great on the mound. He was a power hitter as well. Gets shelled. He had Tommy John, missed all of last season. He comes back. He starts over the weekend. And in the first inning, faces 6 batters, gives up 3 hits and 3 walks. Yikes. Here's Joe Maddon.
Well, he just didn't throw the ball very well. I mean, I can't sit here and make excuses for him. I'm not going to do that. It just wasn't his day. Fastball wasn't coming out. There was no deception in his pitches. And the hitters will tell you that. These are, you know, major league hitters. The walks were a big part of that. Had he maybe righted himself by forcing those couple, three hitters to put the ball in plate, may have had a different result. But it was a combination. The stuff wasn't the same and his command was down. I was thinking like 40 pitches normally in a first inning of a pitcher starter goes about 40. That's pretty much the Waterloo mark. But it just wasn't going to get better.
He did not record an out. Gave up 5 runs in the first inning. So they were down 5-0 before he had an out, before the team recorded an out. His fastball topped out at 92. His fastball averaged 92.7. It maxed out at 94.7. Look, you want to allow big league hitters to hit you? Have a fastball that averages 92 miles an hour. They're going to absolutely destroy you. This is really sad, but it is one outing. It's sad that Ohtani could be that bad, but again, it's one outing. And thankfully, it wasn't 3 home runs. It was singles by the A's that roughed him up and walks. He couldn't find the strike zone, didn't have a good fastball, and they were hitting him on singles. Fine. It's disastrous, but it's not the end of the world. It's only one start, but it's a real worry, and we'll see if Ohtani can get his timing back and his strength back, what have you, because you take all of that time off, and you were a hitter and a pitcher. And remember, Ohtani was supposed to be indestructible because he was so healthy and strong when he was playing across seas, and then one fell swoop, of course, he comes here to the States, and he's under scrutiny because of injury and trying to come back from it. And now, finally, Jody Mack had a long layoff here for CBS Sports Radio. Jody Mack, like many of our part-time hosts or fill-in anchors or weekend hosts, did not have a lot of work during the pandemic. But thankfully, CBS Sports Radio is doing a great job getting everybody back into the fray. So it's great to hear the familiar voices once again, nights, weekends, etc. So one of those being Jody Mack. And Jody Mack coming back to the CBS Sports Radio airwaves and just immediately picking up where he left off. This is why he is a living legend.
Glad to be back. They tried to do me a solid, do me an FAN Sunday night shift. So I've been talking to my New York listeners more than I usually do over the last couple of months. But I'm back to you guys on the national level, national front. And we will make the most of it over the next 3+ hours right here.
Okay, now I want somebody to walk me through this. Mraz, walk me through this. Was that a drop from the board op, like the Pete the Body Bilotti of that shift, putting in a little drop of somebody yelling?
No. So what that was Jody Mack turning away from his microphone because he's so still on to us even in his return and coughing. And it was able to be heard very faintly around dead air, and that was actually the amplified sound in playing back to make sure our audience heard exactly what Jody Mack did very clearly.
Well, I do like that you're suggesting that Jody Mack is, quote, onto us. This is why he doesn't sneeze on the mic. Maybe just not sneezing on the mic is because you're not supposed to sneeze on the mic or cough into the microphone. That's just what a professional is.
Fair.
But DA, again, like we alluded to at the beginning of the show with the starting pitchers and the rash of injuries, Jody Mack with the rash of coughs was something he never shied away from on the air. You know, then the DA show got onto him and it became much like a 60-game season. You got to be very, very careful. So he goes off mic. Luckily, we still to this day, think about this. It's what, July 27th, 2020, have eyes and ears all over the place. I'm getting text messages. Hey, just so you know, Jody Mack's coughs are back. It was off mic. We got to take care of it. Much like I might be the Schwartz beat reporter, we have Jody Mack beat reporters out there. So that was just an amplified version for our audience to hear. I will say it sounded like a cleaner sneeze or cough.
Yeah.
That sounded more traditional, but it should be known that sounds are still illuminating.
Well, I wonder if this is him holding in a sneeze. Like, if you hold in a sneeze, it sounds way different than if you just let her rip. You know, so maybe it's kind of like through gritted teeth, or he's almost trying to hold it in. Can we play this entire clip start to finish so that people can hear what it sounded like? And then when you hear it, that's actually the sneeze off mic being amplified.
Glad to be back. They tried to do me a solid throw, do me an FAN Sunday night shift. So I've been talking to my New York listeners more than I usually do over the last couple of months. But I'm back to you guys on the national level, national front. And we will make the most of it over the next 3+ hours right here.
That one sounded like it hurt. Every other time, it just sounds like emphysema or pneumonia. But that one felt like it hurt, like it could sprain a rib or something.
Well, yeah. I think you're on to something with the holding in the sneeze, because you did hear the hesitation. Much like in that PGP where I had the oopsie, you could hear the tremble in his voice that something was going to happen. And it does give you that sound of when you're holding in a sneeze and like you're sucking air through your teeth. It's like a... Like one of those. So I totally see it. But I also wonder, DA, maybe I was wrong. Maybe the show wasn't onto him. Maybe because Jody Mack is such a public sneezer and cougher. Uh-huh. During the coronavirus, he has had to get used to trying to hold in sneezes.
Oh!
Now, because, you know, Mack runs into Wawa for his 15 packs of cigs. A Jody Mack goes to the supermarket to get whatever a Jody Mack eats, some canned sandwiches.
Jody Mack eats, like right. He's a panda bear in the wild.
Right. Bam. Jody Mack out
in public.
And there
are many of him.
Right. Jody Mack out in public in 2019 is sneezing and coughing all over the produce section of a supermarket. Jody Mack now, anytime you see somebody cough or sneeze in public, right, your reaction is, wait, hold on here. What's wrong with you? Yep. We know what Jody Mack doesn't have, the coronavirus. We just has the Jody Mack virus. But other public people don't know that. So he's gotten used to and accustomed to, I think, the grin and bear it sneeze that you heard just there.
That's like Jody Mack doing Ray Lewis or Brian Dawkins. Also, before we move on, I just want to play it all in its entirety one more time, because I want you to hear in succession as it starts to ramp up. You could hear it tickling his nose a little bit, and he's starting to be like, and then he goes,
glad to be back. They tried to do me a solid throw, do me an FAN Sunday night shift. So I've been talking to my New York listeners more than I usually do over the last couple of months. But I'm back to you guys on the national level, national front. And we will make the most of it over the next 3+ hours right here.
It's like there's something trying to get out, and he's choking it back down.
Over the last couple of months, but I'm back to you guys.
Like there's some kind of gremlin crawling up his throat, and he has to jam it back down.
That was the sneezes version of ringing a doorbell to say it's Also, the prelude is great, too. I love the fact that the company gives him work, and he goes, the company tried to do me a solid.
It almost sounds like Jody Mack was sparring with somebody, and he was, like, holding the mat or holding the gloves and was taking a punch to the solar plexus. Hit me again.
Cut me, Mick. Cut me.
Yeah, cut me, Mick. Cut me, Stu. Cut me. Shep, cut me, Shep. Shep, do you have any gauze in that garbage bag that you hauled here from home? Cut me, Shep.
It's the same noise that Happy Gilmore makes when he's taking the pitching machine balls to the chest.
Yeah. Shep, do you have a 10-year-old handkerchief that may or may not be used in that garbage sack of yours? I'm about to sneeze. Okay, I need straight 151 in this Wawa cup. I'm drinking it right now. Now I'm ready for the Jamal Adams trade. Seahawks got 2 ones. Joe Douglas. All right. That is your sound check. Andrew Bogish.
Does sound healthier, guys. He does sound healthier.
Finish him.
Yeah. I mean, he took his first words into a microphone, and he got like 3 sentences in before making an inhuman noise. Does he really sound better?
Yeah. He sounded less wet, so I think that's a win. It's like a dry heat in Vegas. You don't want the humidity coming with the Joni Mac hack.
Victory in advance.
Yeah. He used to be Gainesville in July, and now he's Las Vegas in July.
It is hilarious, too, that he needs to walk around like with a reverse life alert bracelet, assuring people the noises he's making are not coronavirus.
Destruction.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to get back to the studio. Can we just have a temperature check on Jody constantly?
How about we just all chip in, get him a connection at home?
Yeah,
keep him
really.
His own bubble.
Oh, yeah.
I think I don't have a problem with that.
You could see Shep going into the studio in a hazmat suit. He's like working nuclear radiation. Looks like he's in Chernobyl.
Yeah, I'm
just wiping down the studio after Jody was there. Okay. Yeah. It's like Streets of Rage.
And now, let's begin a new week of stutters. Woo.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
So with all the different restrictions, travel restrictions in effect all around the country and the globe, I've often wondered how governments actually are tracking people who are supposed to be quarantining as they come back from a place crossing state lines. They're clearly not sitting outside everybody's houses. They're not giving out GPS monitors. So it seems like something you can get away with breaking as long as you don't do it stupidly, which brings us to today's stun to a news. If you are a social media influencer, don't post on social media when you're out and about and not quarantining at home for 14 days. Annie Salamanca is from Alabama, but apparently is very popular in the Philippines. And earlier this month, she flew from Manila to Honolulu, which should have triggered 14 days in self-quarantine. But she went out for shopping, did some dancing in one of those stores, eventually had a bite to eat, and put it all on social media. And because she's popular, a lot of people saw it, including Hawaii's tourism authority, who then went to her house and arrested her. She was released on bond, and that court case obviously will proceed. She says she was told by police she could leave her house as long as she kept testing negative, which is not the policy, and the police call BS on an explanation. But again, the moral of the story is, if you're supposed to be quarantining and you're popular and you're going to break quarantine, don't tell everyone about it. It seems simple.
This is awesome. So this chick is apparently named Mika Salamanca on YouTube. She has millions of subscribers, and she's huge, as you said, in the Philippines. Why do you think you'd get away with it if you have millions of subscribers on YouTube and millions of people are seeing what you're doing and they know the rules? And I watched a news story on this, and the people that turned her in or alerted the tourism board and the authorities were young females that would follow her on the social media channels. So they interviewed like 3 of these women that are all in their 20s, early 20s or something, maybe even late teens. And they follow her on social media, and they're like, and they live in Hawaii. And they're like, wait a second, I see her at this store. I see her at this restaurant. She's supposed to be quarantining. And they started to get other people following and brought attention to it, and then brought the attention to the tourism board and the authorities. And this is brilliant by these young women. And they said, look, we just want to keep our community safe. We want to make sure we're all doing our part. And I just think that this is when young people step up, and I appreciate young people doing it because they understand social media. They understand how to draw attention to things. They understand how this whole game works with algorithms and whatnot. And they're using it to better situations where they're saying, look, we like her, but she's unsafe here. She shouldn't be doing this. And we're going to call her out and draw attention to it. I think it's great. I think young people that understand how they can use this as a tool, absolutely, and try to do it for the right reasons, I think is great. And also, this is the addiction of having a million subscribers, where you can't go to Hawaii and not dance in the pharmacy aisle of the Rite Aid to a TikTok song. Because you have to, because you need the attention, and you have the subscribers, you have to put out a video, and then ultimately, you know, you end up looking like an idiot for it and being called out for it because she just can't go to Hawaii without doing her videos and showing everybody what she's doing. So it's kind of perfect. And as I was also watching this video, struck me that as I watched the segment on KITV for ABC's affiliate in Honolulu and Good Morning Hawaii, boy, I've had the wrong media jobs. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I was one of the lucky ones. My first job out of college was in Fort Myers, Florida, so I got to go to the beach. I had friends that went to Zanesville, Ohio, market number 199. Friends that went to Dothan, Alabama. Friends that went to Burlington, Vermont. Friends that went to San Angelo, Texas. I mean, some outposts. Imagine landing Good Morning Hawaii. I mean, I don't care if you're a tape op, a script writer, running the teleprompter, mopping the floors. I mean, Mraz, this would be the best media job ever to work on Good Morning Hawaii. I can do it. I'll retire. That'll be my send-off to the media world. My goodness, would that be beautiful.
Good Morning Hawaii. Great. The moment I'm done producing Good Morning Hawaii, I am rolling right to the beach. Maybe I'll do a little parasailing after. It's Hawaii. It is breathtaking, it is unbelievable, and you still basically feel like you're an American. You can go to Cheesecake Factory if you want, because it is America. It's an unbelievable, unbelievable place.
Yeah, you always go
to
back to this, that it's such a blessing that they have Cheesecake Factory.
No, because you know, it feels like you land in Bora Bora, and you turn around and there's a Buffalo Wild Wings. It is the most unbelievable place on earth, and to have a media job there, get me there.
Which is hysterical that you would need a Buffalo Wild Wings in Bora Bora. You're like, oh, man, the palm trees, the green water, the ocean air. It's not enough. At least there's a Buffalo Wild Wings where I can get cheesy Parmesan wings.
No, it's
I think he's an Asian Zing guy.
And it's parm garlic. Have a little respect. Number two, I'm not saying I need the Buffalo Wild Wings. I'm saying it's an astonishing, you know, when you travel enough to some of these tropical places, when you land, you're like, wait a minute. Why do I feel like I'm in Secaucus? But then there's a beautiful, clear beach. It's unbelievable.
I haven't felt like a lot of Secaucuses have beautiful, clear beaches, though.
Right. That's why it is breathtaking. It's fantastic. I mean, they have your Home Depots, they have your Lowe's, and then they have great snorkeling and clear water. It's unbelievable.
Bogish, why didn't our journalism professors tell us this? Look, you're not going to get paid a lot of money in this industry. You're going to work terrible hours. You might want to get out now. But if you're in it, just get yourself to Honolulu. Get yourself to that ABC affiliate in Honolulu. It's the only job you'll ever actually be happy in.
Yeah, I remember people coming to talk to us and telling us how hard this was and like almost threatening us not to do it, like trying to do us a solid and send us home and stay away from Jody Max and, you know, airtight cubicles with germs. No one ever mentioned set your sights on Honolulu. There's a thing called Good Morning Hawaii. Mm-hmm. No one said that to us. Mm-hmm. Where are those people?
I
feel let down. We could certainly still be sleeping right now. Or maybe just now getting up to prep for this morning's edition, talking about Annie Salamanca dancing in her hair.
Oh, man! Wouldn't you love to do the rundown on Good Morning Hawaii? I mean, you know, this sand dune got flooded. Annie Salamanca's dancing at the Rite Aid. And then we'll lead with your weather. It's going to be 82, sunny, and dry for the next 16 days. Back to you. I mean, it's just awesome! I want... that job.
Okay, sports radio is a little rough there too because every day your lead has to be passionately why the Pro Bowl needs to come back tomorrow. always going to be a tough gig there.
And why it's time to bring back June Jones. So the San Diego Padres came into the season with a rebrand, with a reboot. It never made any sense that the Padres tried all different color combinations except brown and yellow. I realized the brown and yellow might feel very 70s. It might feel very dated. But it was their brand. And then in the 90s, they went to the dark blue and orange, the Tony Gwynn jerseys like in 98 when they went to the World Series, the Trevor Hoffman jerseys. Then they tried to go to the sand jerseys. It was like a light gold with dark blue as well. And they kept avoiding the obvious that the Padres' only identifiable uniform ever was the brown and yellows from the 70s and early 80s. The old school Ozzie Smith, the old school Dave Winfield, the old school Steve Garvey, those are the only ones that ever really mattered. And the Padres being a franchise without a no-hitter, without a World Series championship, by and large being unidentifiable, they needed to go back to brown and yellow. It was their only brand. And to avoid it for so long was so silly. And finally, they heard their fans, and they did it. And they unveiled three different jerseys this weekend, one of which was the camouflage, which is in honor of the naval bases and the military that are based in San Diego, which totally cool. They've always used those. One of which was a dark brown top, which I liked the brown, but one of which was so awesome. They were kind of cream, maybe white jerseys. They had brown pinstripes, brown hats, brown Padres ringed in yellow across their chest. And these jerseys were so awesome because they were the Padres brown and yellow, but they were just slightly modernized. It wasn't too crazy. Just slightly modernized, but the color palette, the color combo was so awesome. When I saw Manny Machado hit that two-run home run, and he's rounded the bases in a brown hat and a white with a brown pinstripe jersey combination and uniform, brown Padres across the chest, I said, that's it. They nailed it. That's the jersey. That is it. That's how you take a brand, and that's how you still hold on to the one thing that's identifiable. Nobody else uses brown. Okay, it's a little UPS-ish. Fine. It looked awesome. Absolutely awesome. Mraz, I don't know how you felt. I thought the Padres unveiling the browns finally was a grand salami.
I actually tweeted this on Saturday night, DA, when they were playing the D-backs on FS1. That pinstriped look of the with the brown, with the yellow trim and everything, that, I think, off the top of my head, has to now catapult itself into a top five favorite uniform for me in all the four major sports.
Top five of any of the four sports.
Of any of the four sports. And I think, and again, I really have to do a hard press look, but I can't remember feeling that way about a uniform. Like, I had tingles when I saw them playing in that uniform. Like, wow, that is old school with new school. They somehow have melded the two and nailed it. I think it's my favorite uniform in the entire sport now is that specific pinstripe.
Really?
Look with the brown. It is unbelievable. So much so, I have already been online yesterday and a little bit this morning. You refresh me, obviously, with this. For the first time, probably since I was in college, looking to buy another team's jersey and another team's hat. That's how much I love that Padre look.
Wow, you want to invest in this. You actually want to pour your own money into this.
I actually think that Padre pinstripe jersey and even the hat is a cool thing whenever we're allowed to actually act in society again, kind of like that, you know, how jerseys can be cool to wear. I think it could be a cool thing just to wear out at a party, wear to a beat, something like that, having that Padre look, a Tatis Jr. jersey, something like that. It is so unique with the brown, yet so classic looking with the clean white and the pinstripes. It's perfect. It's damn near perfect, DA.
It's really weird that nobody does brown. No team ever does brown. It's just, immediately, right. You don't do it with your color scheme. And the Padres tried it. And I think they tried it because Ray Kroc was their owner, who was the developer of McDonald's and wanted to tie the two together. So I think that's why they had that original brown and yellow color scheme. And they went away from it in, my guess is like the early 90s, never to come back to brown. And it never made any sense to me because you could be the only team ever with brown. It was in your color scheme. You're not trying to create this out of nowhere. And of course, it looks a little 70s, but if you do it well, which they did, it's totally unique. And I'm with you. A brown Padres hat is so unique that no matter if you root for them or not, it would be a cool addition to your hat collection to have a brown hat.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's a team with a lot of young talent as well. So my hope, personally, is that that team gets really good. I hope they get one of the 8 playoff spots. I would love to see brown and these uniforms, since they're so unique, play in big stages and become a really big team with them. I think it would be absolutely awesome rather than them not be good for 3 years and it's franchise like the Padres go, it's time for another rebrand. No, I want success in these uniforms so that the franchise keeps the uniforms and they're always looked at as the perfect uniform because they really are.
And what's undoubtedly at play now is San Diego as the city with the best uniforms because the Chargers just rebooted theirs and went old school.
Yeah, but the Chargers don't play in San Diego anymore.
I guess that's true. I guess I'm trying to tie them to this. The problem is that the Chargers jerseys are the San Diego Chargers jerseys.
Right.
They went back to their San Diego days. So if you're in San Diego and you still care about the Chargers, I guess, you're getting the old school Dan Fouts-esque unis, and then you're also getting these brown Padres reboots. Freaking awesome. And how much baseball did you watch this weekend?
Yeah, I watched from 1 o'clock to at points 1 a.m. all 3 days dating back. Friday, I started late. The first game was at 4. But, yeah, yesterday and Sunday, I was up late. And Friday, I was up watching the A's and Angels with the runner on second at 1 a.m. So, yeah, I had a lot of baseball in my blood.
No one knows what analytics is. They think it's like a bunch of nerds doing math, which I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
All right, and so today's question, after Lou Williams of the Clippers left for a family funeral, left the NBA bubble, and then found himself at Magic City, a strip club in Atlanta, photographed by his friend, who's a rapper, posted on social media. Then when he got into trouble, his rapper friend said, "Oh, that's just an old picture. I was just reminiscing." Yeah, sure you were. Lou Williams is wearing a mask from the NBA bubble. It can't be that old of a picture. Mraz's idea was the NBA should have a strip club inside the bubble. Do you think this is a good idea? On Twitter, 55% of you said no. On Facebook, 57% said no. The majority said no strip clubs inside the Disney bubble. No, it's a small world with Snow White, the seven dwarves.
Just build it in Space Mountain.
Tinkerbell stripping. Here are some advanced analytics stats brought to you by the good people at Andrew Kaplan and Company. Magic City's Kitchen, which is their restaurant, has 4.5 stars on Yelp. Its signature wings are named after Lou Williams now. A 10-piece of Lou Will lemon pepper barbecue wings costs $15. Let me tell you, I would spend any amount of cash right now for a gold belly delivery of Lou Will lemon pepper barbecue wings. I could absolutely crush 10 Lou Will lemon pepper barbecue wings right now for breakfast. Sure I could.
D.A., were they – I'm being sincere in asking this. Do we believe, since everybody keeps saying that you – of course you eat the food there. When the pandemic happened, before Georgia reopened, were people doing curbside pickup and to-go dinners from Magic City?
I don't know about Magic City. I had read some articles, though, that this was how some strip clubs were staying in business during pandemic by offering curbside food service. Now, I don't know about you – I've never had the inclination to eat at a strip club. Every strip club I've ever been in strikes me as the type of place I wouldn't trust their kitchen. Some people, though, swear by strip club food, For me, I just never feel like this is the type of place I want to use their utensils.
Yeah, that's not the time. I don't mix business with pleasure. That's the way I would look at it. And Bart Scott used to tell me some of the best meals he got as an NFL player on the road happened the night before games at strip clubs, more so than big steakhouses. So, hey, take that for what it's worth. Some people live with that food.
I can only ask you this question, but may I ask you to clarify which is the business and which is the pleasure when it comes to eating at a strip club?
Oh, business is eating, right? Oh, like, I make a business of eating. Like, that is, you need that to fuel you, and I look at it as a very focused situation when I have my dinner. The pleasure would be the strip club. Dinner is not necessarily pleasurable. It's all about business, and you want to be buttoned up and take care of it the best you can with what you're in the mood for.
You could have went either way there. I wouldn't have been surprised. Either you would frame your eating as almost a second job. It is so important. It is so vital. It is something that you take so seriously. In fact, probably more disciplined about your eating than this job. Not probably. Actually more disciplined about eating and your eating schedule, yeah, and your options than this job. But I would also say I could see you considering dinner pleasure, that that's actually the most pleasurable experience, not going to see naked women, that actually your food would be the most pleasurable experience. You could have went either way there.
I guess you're right. I still look at food as a business, but there's no doubt there have been times where I've had like a hot fudge sundae or Reese's Pieces where it has just hit me right far more than a strip club would. Absolutely. Like if I was an NFL player and I was playing a game, let's say in San Francisco, I was flying to play the Niners. For me, everybody in the team's going to strip club. No, I want to go to Ghirardelli and get that ice cream you and I got ahead of Super Bowl 50. Like, I would get far more pleasure and tickling out of the chocolate fudge and every bite of that ice cream. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. Then they could all go see everything they want to see at a strip club. Give me Ghirardelli and give me the ice cream. That's the way I would look at it.
Yeah, I saw your face and your reaction to the Ghirardelli chocolate, and I've never been with a buddy at a strip club that looked that in ecstasy. So
exactly.
Ghirardelli actually wins. Home Depot is here with everything that you need to do projects smarter, faster, and easier. The Home Depot is here to help, and they've got many ways to do so. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. Our Ask the Pros question of the day brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. Tim is in Seattle. DA, do you think we gave up too much for Jamal Adams? Well, yes. I think that two first-round draft picks for a position that's not a quarterback, pass rusher, corner, or left tackle is going to be too much. I just don't believe in giving up two ones, especially when you're a team that drafts as well as the Seahawks for a position like safety. You know, if you're a team that busts on draft picks like the Browns all the time, trading away two ones might not be a bad thing because you stink at drafting anyway. But for the Seahawks, that's a lot of collateral for a safety position that's not, it doesn't necessarily get that type of value. And you knew the Jets had to trade him because they had no leverage. He couldn't come back and play for them after what he had tried to set fire to. So I did think the cost was too high for the Seahawks. Now, do I think Jamal Adams is a great player? I do. He's got a lot of talent. He's still ascending. They have a lineage of great defensive backs under Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll lets big personalities play well, so this could be a great fit for them. But if you're asking me the cost on acquiring Jamal Adams, two ones and a three, yeah, I think that was too high. Let's get your epic fail of the morning, boys and girls. And Jody Mack was back on our airwaves over the weekend, which was great after a long hiatus. But the moment he came back, we had yet another cough. It is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Yeah. Jody Mack off sleeping on a couch, 15 packs of cigarettes and 15 energy drinks. What'd you think was going to happen?
I don't know what happened, but Jody is set up recording 15 different interviews with David Lennon of Newsday. I don't know why, but he just wants to keep ripping through these interviews. Let's tape it again. I got another question.
I tell you put the bomb on? I didn't tell you put the bomb on.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, but Jody's actually chewing his Wawa cup right now. He's actually eating it.
They are the only...
He's snacking on it.
Excuse me.
Oh, he just had nine different Rooster Boosters.
And it should be noted, his Wawa cup is so old it has Kevin Cobb in an Eagles jersey on it. Early in the promotion.
and I'm going to be a crotchety old you-know-what if I last another 40 years.
Catcher 2002, Philadelphia Eagles.
That's Dick Vermeil.
Catch Ron Jaworski and your Philadelphia Eagles.
Brought to you by RC Cola.
Who does the old school, new school thing.
Do you love Tab? Get a 64-ounce Tab, and it's new Phillies Cup. Hi, I'm Von Hayes for Tab.
Catcher 1983, Philadelphia Phillies, all season long on TV6.
Excuse me.
Mickey Morandini has this cup, so should you.
Look, the Broad Street Bullies.
This thing gets a dollar off the Blockbuster rental of your choice.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Mraz, how do you feel about Giancarlo Stanton going yard with two monstrous blasts in the first weekend?
I love it. That's my guy right now. He's obviously raking. And look, I've said for a long time, I want him to succeed. He has absolutely stunk and been abysmal. But if Giancarlo's going to get up there and keep hitting bombs every single game and help the Yankees win, how can I not love him? I'm bowing at his feet right now. I hope this continues all year long.
How could you say my guy, though, when you've just beaten on him for years?
Because I like to think that, you know, a little negative, you know, booing and motivation helps a guy. And if I've been the ringleader of the anti-Giancarlo circus, you heard Adnan Virk talk about how great a shape he's in. He had to have had guys like me in the back of his head knowing he had to be in great shape and compete. So I'd like to think I've taken a small piece of this and done a good job in helping Giancarlo get to where he is.
So you think that he achieved his stardom and National League MVP award in his professional career, his motivation up until he became a Yankee was based on what? I mean, he didn't have you when he was developing into one of the best sluggers in the game.
Well, less pressure. I mean, it doesn't really cost anything to hit all those bombs for the Marlins when you're not going to make the playoffs. With the Yankees, I mean, if you're not performing, we're going to let you know, and you're going to have to rethink things and rethink about how you're going about your day. I mean, A-Rod said it last Thursday night. He's going to benefit from no crowd booing him. So I think there's something there to it, but I think his preseason mentality was all about guys like me, and it's helping. So I've helped the case.
Yeah, I'm glad you took credit for Giancarlo Stanton's big weekend. Of course you would. That'll do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Tomorrow, Trash Tuesday, and Jared Greenberg from the NBA bubble. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Connor Green, your associate producer. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Thanks to Andrew Bogish, our headlines extraordinaire every single day. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. I'm DA, the Mothership Disconnects.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.